This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
Have you noticed that one of the most amazing things about the Bible is that it's true? And if it's true, then a lot of things that it says that people don't think could possibly happen can actually happen. In fact, not only can actually happen, but will actually happen. Today on Viewpoint, we're going to discuss one of those things that people say is impossible, that people say just couldn't possibly happen. But it not only can, it will. But it will happen in God's timing. And His timing apparently may be coming shorter than we might think. So today on Viewpoint, I hope you'll stay tuned, friends, because we're going to talk about something that very few people are talking about. Everybody's talking about, well, the hostages getting released. They're talking about what's going on in the Panama Canal. They're talking about executive orders here and executive orders there and all of the kinds of things and deals with Mexico and deals with Canada. What they're not talking about is the possible deal with Gaza. You say, possible deal with Gaza? Are you talking about releasing more hostages? No, it's not about the hostages at all. It's about the whole issue of Gaza and the people that currently inhabit Gaza. Is it possible that those people will no longer inhabit Gaza? And if so, where would they go? Why would they no longer inhabit Gaza? For what reason? Well, according to the Jerusalem Post today, approximately 80% of Israelis support President Trump's plan to relocate Gazans. Maybe you weren't aware of this, but you will be when you listen to this program here today, because it has implications potentially vast beyond anything that the world currently imagines, even the fulfillment a biblical prophecy in ways that otherwise would have been thought impossible. Less than 15% of Israelis believe Trump's plan is immoral, including 54% of Arab respondents and only 3% of Jewish Israelis. In other words, there seems to be a growing sense over there in the Middle East that maybe what Donald Trump is proposing is not only reasonable, it's good. A large majority of Israeli Jews support U.S. President Donald Trump's proposal to relocate Gaza's population to other countries. The survey, which was published ahead of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's meeting with President Trump today, found that approximately 8 out of 10 Jewish Israelis support Trump's suggestion that Arabs from Gaza should relocate to another country, while most Arab Israelis oppose the proposal. But according to the findings, 43% of all Israelis believe Trump's plan is practical and should be pursued, while an additional 30% of Jewish Israelis respond that the plan is not practical, but desirable, meaning they support the idea but don't see how it's realistically feasible. However, 13% of Israelis believe Trump's proposal is immoral. This group includes 54% of Arab respondents in Israel and only 3% of Jewish Israelis. So, all that having been said, what we're looking at is a situation where approximately 80% of Israelis support President Donald Trump's plan to relocate Gazans. Well, how many Gazans are there? Well, in round figures, maybe about 2 million. About 2 million. And some are saying that, hey, those there in Gaza are actually, they shouldn't be there. They're a danger not only to Israel, but to the world. So if that be true, then what do you do with them? Who are they anyway? And where might they be relocated? According to Bezalel Smotrich there in Israel, he's the finance minister, he criticized the risks of the hostage deal and called to adopt President Trump's proposal to move the Gazans to another country. The pictures of tens of thousands of Gazans returning to the northern part of the Gaza Strip and the presence of Hamas gunmen roaming the area with their white Toyotas are evidence, he says, of some of the high and terrible price that Israel is already paying for the so-called hostage deal. He said, in his view, Israel has surrendered significant leverage in the war in exchange for a partial agreement. The heavy pressure of Hamas to open the corridor demonstrates how, as he said, I have warned for months, Israel has surrendered its most important gains for a deal that leaves dozens of hostages behind and does not realize the war's objectives. The destruction of Hamas's military and civilian power and the guarantee of Israel's security. So according to Smotrich, at the conclusion of the first stage of the so-called hostage deal, the approach must be changed completely. And that is why he says we oppose the deal and have announced that at the conclusion of the first stage, Israel will return to the war in a completely different way that will bring about a decisive victory. So, this leader, who is one of the more vocal leaders in Israel, is saying, look, I agree with the viewpoint, the idea that President Donald Trump has expressed about relocating the Gazans to other countries. So, where would they be relocated to? Where did they come from? Were they originally part of Israel, or were they part of something else? Were they part of the ancient Philistines that were located in the Gaza Strip? The very towns there in the Gaza Strip were known in the Bible to be in Philistine country, like Ashkelon. In some of the areas in which the prophet Samson, carried on his antics, or whatever you might call them, were right there in Gaza. So, on the other hand, our new U.S. Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, has declared Hamas can never govern Gaza or threaten Israel again. He told that to the Egyptian foreign minister yesterday. If that be true, what is he talking about? If Hamas can never govern Gaza, and yet the people in the Gaza Strip are almost 100% in support in some way of Hamas, what is to be done? Donald Trump says maybe the only hope, the only possible settlement, is to relocate them. We'll talk about that when we get back. What does the Bible have to say about where they might be relocated? Is this the first step in accomplishing the fulfillment of biblical prophecy? We'll be right back. Stay tuned. This is Viewpoint.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination.
So what happened in just one generation?
Hi, I'm Chuck Crismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
Again, I welcome you back to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Crismeyer. The nations of the earth are repositioning themselves, realigning themselves in major ways that heretofore would not have been believable. It's true. Africa is realigning itself with China and with Russia, believe it or not. It's leaving any alliance to the West and falling into the arms of China and Russia. Who would have ever believed such a thing? Who would have ever believed that there would have been a Middle East settlement agreement, the Abraham Accords, that occurred during the first chapter of Donald Trump's presidency a few years ago? Who would have ever believed such a thing? But it happened. And now, in all of the flurry of executive orders and decisions and a cutting away of major organizations, parts of government in our country in order to save money, in order to get dominion and control of what's going on in the country, some other things are happening that may be every bit as big and maybe bigger in the eyes of God than all the other things put together. That's why we're focusing on it here on Viewpoint Today. Viewpoint determines destiny, and so many people have a very weak idea concerning what the Bible says, except for things that they think they understand up front. The problem is that we don't understand everything up front in the Bible. We just don't. And we have to humble ourselves to realize that that is true. Now, we want to figure out certain kinds of things, but there are some kinds of things we conclude in our rational minds that that could not possibly happen, therefore it can't be true. One of those things is that the borders of Israel could possibly extend to the extent that God gave in his decree to Abraham and extended to Isaac and carried on to Jacob. And that is that the borders of Israel would run from the southern part of Lebanon all the way down to the river of Egypt, the Nile, and then from the Mediterranean Sea, which runs all along Israel and along the Gaza Strip, all the way over to the Euphrates River. So let me ask you a question, just to get our geography in place here. Since we already know that the Mediterranean Sea borders not only what is currently known as Israel, but also the Gaza Strip, all the way down to Egypt. Therefore, we could reasonably conclude that what God was saying to Abraham is, all of that land is going to be yours, including the Gaza Strip. But that's not all. He said it's going to be from southern Lebanon, the very area where Hezbollah actually has been setting up its munitions to attack Israel, that area also would be part of Israel. Is that possible? Well, apparently, when Israel began its attack on Hezbollah just a few weeks ago, they began to take over all of that territory as security for northern Israel. But then again, there's this issue of the Euphrates River. Now, if you were to look at a map of the Middle East, Israel and Syria and Jordan and Saudi Arabia and Iraq, you would find a very unusual configuration. In fact, you would discover that the Euphrates River runs through an area of both Syria and Jordan, what is currently known as Syria and Jordan. Oh. So are you saying then that Israel is promised all the land, for the most part, almost all the land of what is now Jordan, and at least part of the land that is now known as Syria? I'm not saying that. That's what the Bible says. So we have to decide, did God know what he was saying? Did God know what he was doing? And if God said it, is it true? You see, this is one of those areas where we have to determine whether the issue is God said it, I believe it, and that settles it, or whether God said it, and that settles it, whether I believe it or not. And that really is the truth, isn't it? If God is God and I'm not, then if God said it, we should accept it as true. There are many things like that in the Bible concerning our lives. For instance, let's say that God said, you should not get involved with non-believers in your business or in your marriages or so on. Don't be associated with non-believers. You say, well, you know, I have a hard time with that because, I mean, should I just not do business anymore? Should I just not do this, that? Is God saying I can't marry a non-believer? Is God saying I can't enter into a partnership with a non-believer, whatever? That's exactly what he said. But we don't like it because we think otherwise. For instance, years ago, this has to be about maybe 40 years ago. I was practicing law in Southern California, and I was in a small office in Los Angeles. There were four lawyers. It had the reputation of being a Christian law office. The person I replaced happened to have been my Sunday school teacher in an evangelical church, and he had lost his family in an airplane crash, his own airplane. And so I came in and filled that spot in that office. Well, the unfortunate thing is that there were only two of the four people now in that office who were Christians. Now, they had a background in Christianity. I can't say they didn't believe in God, but they weren't practicing Christians. And so one day I came to the position after 4 years there that I was being considered for partnership. Now, could I become a partner there? At that time, a magazine or a paper was being published by the Christian Businessmen's Committee all over the country, CBMC, and they asked the question for 3 months in a row, what should you do if you had the opportunity to enter into a business deal, some sort of a deal with a non-believer? And so they put the question out there and they wanted people to respond. Well, each month for 3 months, the answers came back and I read them and it turned my stomach. Because here's what happened. Almost all of the answers that came back said, well, I'd pray about it and then I'd do it. As if somehow praying about it overcame what God had said about such ungodly alliances. Don't do it. But they said they'd pray about it. Does prayer obviate what God has said? No. And I got so sick to my stomach after seeing my Christian brothers all over the country responding, having so little respect for the authority of God and His Word, that it set my mind and my heart to realize, hey, maybe I shouldn't even be considering partnership here. Well, right about that time, a godly secretary there in that office came to me privately and said, Chuck, you're not considering partnership here, are you? Well, that settled it. That settled it. What really settled it is what God had said. But now that these things had come upon me twice, in fact, four times, three different publications, and now this Christian secretary said, you're going to consider partnership here, are you? Because she knew what my commitment to the Lord was and to His Word. And so I gave notice, and 30 days later, I left. They couldn't believe their eyes or their ears what I had done, and for my own law office. It was an act of faith. I couldn't continue on there initially I was like an employee or an independent contractor, but now a partner, I can't do it. So I use that as an illustration just to show how we Christians are prone to think. We don't think very highly of God's word. If we did, we wouldn't have a 50% divorce rate. If we did, we wouldn't have a divorce rate in the Bible Belt of America for the past 25 years that exceeded the nation as a whole by 50%, would we? We wouldn't have that. So I use that as an illustration completely outside the realm of what we're talking about here with regard to Israel, with what we're talking about, the borders, to take another look at what Donald Trump has proposed here. That, man, it is almost breathtaking. U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio spoke yesterday with the Egyptian foreign minister, actually it was last Tuesday, emphasizing the importance of close cooperation to ensure Hamas cannot govern the Gaza Strip again. What are the implications of Hamas not governing the Gaza Strip again? Well, from Donald Trump's position, it requires a complete and radical rethinking of the Middle East and the whole situation there. It's no longer about a Palestinian state. It's no longer about a two-state solution. It's about removing the Gazans from the Gaza Strip. Because they can't continue to be there, they will continue to be a thorn in the flesh. It's like living in a partnership with an unbeliever. And it ain't going to work. Hamas is going to continue to control, and Israel will be forever threatened, constantly threatened. So Donald Trump says, well, maybe what we should be looking at now is relocating all of these Gazans, 2 million of them. He said, when you look at the Gaza Strip, it's been hell for so many years. But Jordan and Egypt have rejected Trump's call to receive Gaza evacuees, with Egyptian foreign ministry saying it rejected any infringement on those inalienable rights, whether by settlement or annexation of land or by the depopulation of that land of its people through displacement, encouraged transfer, or the uprooting of the Palestinians from their land, whether temporary or long term. You know what that forgets? That forgets that when Moses died, God told Joshua to cross the Jordan River from the land of Moab. They had passed through the land of the Edomites, around the land of the Edomites and the Ammonites, and had crushed them, and now they were ready to cross the Jordan. To do what? To get rid of the Canaanites, the Hivites, the Girgashites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, maybe even the Termites. They were supposed to get rid of them all and not leave a single one alive. That's what the Bible says. Read the book of Joshua. My wife and I are reading it as we speak. Well, not as we speak, but each day now until we get through all 24 chapters. And that's exactly what God told Joshua to do. And if they didn't do that, there was, shall we say, hell to pay. It didn't go good. It didn't go well at all. Because after Joshua, the people kind of gave up on the mandate. And they started leaving others, the Canaanites, the Hivites, the Perizzites, the Jebusites, and all of the other sites, started leaving some of them around, and they infiltrated the people and caused them to worship other gods and caused them to lose God's blessing. Wow. Now, if God ordered that, what would he do now?
There is so much more about Chuck Chrismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section. God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. SaveUS.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at SaveUS.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, SaveUS.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, SaveUS.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at SaveUS.org.
Good to be with you here on Viewpoint today. We're dealing with a subject that you're not going to hear very much about, certainly not from a biblical viewpoint, but you are here on this program so that we can better understand how God works among nations to accomplish his declared purposes. Now, if God declares a purpose, ultimately it doesn't matter what anybody else says, what the nations of the earth says, what Vladimir Putin says, what Xi Jinping says, what Kim up there in Northern Korea says. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter what Trudeau says. In one sense, it doesn't matter what Donald Trump says either. What matters is what God says. And we need to get that through our spiritually thick heads. We really do. And we do have spiritually thick heads, because we have a very hard time accepting that God is God and he knows what he's talking about, that he knows the end from the beginning. Oh, we say Jesus is the Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end, but we don't understand what that means. He was the creator of all things. He spoke the worlds into existence. We don't understand that either. In Psalm chapter 2, the fascinating question is asked, why do the heathen rage, or the nations rage, or the people imagine a vain and foolish thing? The kings of the earth are setting themselves against the Lord and against his anointed Israel, saying, let's tear their bands asunder. In other words, we're going to do our own thing. We're not going to follow their ways. We're not going to follow this God. We've got our own ideas. And God responds to them and saying, he laughs. He said, I'm going to have them in derision. In other words, I'm going to drive him crazy. Because he says, what you don't know, guys, speaking to the kings of the world, you don't know, what you don't know is I am God, and I've already decreed and set my king on my holy hill. Now, who is that? That's Yeshua HaMashiach, Jesus, the Savior of the world, the only begotten Son of God, Jesus. He says, I have already decreed. I've set my king, Jesus, on my holy hill. What holy hill is that? The Temple Mount, right there in the heart of Jerusalem. Because Jerusalem is the place where God said, I chose to place my name there. And the Temple Mount is the place which is the pupil of God's eye, right there. It is the very heart of the world from God's viewpoint. Not from your viewpoint, not from the viewpoint of the kings or the prime ministers or presidents or popes of the world, but from God's viewpoint, it is. And therefore, everything that he has decreed from the beginning to the end is not only going to happen, it is happening. It's just not happening on your terms, on my terms, or perhaps in the time frame or in the specific manner that we could foresee that it might happen. So let's talk about this situation concerning the removal of the Gazans. 2 million people. Where would they go, and why would they go there? Before we get into that, I want to make available to you, again, my book, King of the Mountain, The Eternal Epic and End Time Battle, where it said that he who rules the Temple Mount rules the world. Now, whether you can see it or not, this action, this suggestion, whatever you want to call it, by President Donald Trump to remove the Gazans to other countries, I believe, is the first act to fulfill biblical prophecy, or to make it possible for Israel to occupy all of the country that God foretold would happen, was dedicated, was deeded as an eternal leasehold to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It's going to happen. And it's getting ready to happen. But nobody figured how it could possibly happen. But maybe this is part of the leading edge of how it can happen. Get a copy of the book. It's $15. We'll put it in your hands. King of the Mountain. It's one of the best-selling books we have ever had. King of the Mountain. It's so fascinating. It ties the scriptures together from the beginning to the end and helps us to get a picture of how God works and how he is working. It's amazing. You'll be fascinated. It's on our website, saveus.org. Saveus.org. You can call us at 1-800-SAVE-USA, 1-800-SAVE-USA, or write to us at Save America Ministries. P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check at $6 for postage and handling. Again, the name of the book, King of the Mountain. Eternal, epic, and end-time battle. Okay, now, there is a group of people that were the descendants, they were related to Abraham. They were related to Abraham through his nephew, Lot. Now, you remember that Lot chose to settle his family in Sodom. He pitched his tent toward Sodom. Not a good thing. But that's what he did. And God ultimately saw the wickedness of Sodom, that it was beyond. He said, I got to destroy it. So he brings Lot in his mercy and by his compassion, he brings Lot and his family, his two daughters and his wife, out of Sodom. And they're on their way toward Canaan land, where Abraham is. They're on their way that direction, toward the east, excuse me, toward the west. And God says, don't look back. Don't look back. I'm setting your direction this way. I'm setting your direction toward Canaan land, the promised land. Don't look back. Now, some of you have had your direction set toward the promised land too, but you look back. You're always looking back, always second-guessing. Or maybe you're just longing for the culture, and you just have a hard time living a pure and holy life before God. That was the problem with Lot's wife, and she looked back. And she turned into a pillar of salt. They never saw her again. So Lot was with his two daughters, and now he has no wife, and he has two daughters. So they decide to get him drunk. And each one of them on their respective night got him drunk and had sexual relations with their father, who was drunk. How many illicit babies have been born through inebriation? And you thought alcohol was not a problem. But it's brought about some of the most horrendous problems in world history, including what we're about to talk about. So there were two sons that were born to Lot's two daughters. One was called Ammon or Ammon. The other was called Moab. The descendants of Ammon or Ammon became known as the Ammonites. The descendants of Moab became known as the Moabites. And both of those people groups, when God called Israel out of Egypt, made trouble with Israel. So God cursed them. He did. The Ammonites and the Moabites. Well, guess where they lived? They lived in an area that is now called Jordan, or part of Transjordan. That's where the ancient Moabites and the Ammonites lived. So their territories were located east of the Jordan River, placing them in the region known today as Transjordan. So what is Transjordan anyway? Is this an area that historically was known in biblical times? No, it is not. It was created. It was created when Britain defeated the Ottoman Empire back in the around 1921. Or somewhere in the early 1900s. And out of that came what was called the Hashemite Empire. In other words, in 1946, it achieved independence from Britain. This new Jordan, the Hashemite Jordan, and in 1949, changed its name to the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan. So that was right at the time when Israel became a nation in 1948. And the leaders of the Arab world, i.e. the Hashemite kingdom, Egypt, the Saudis and so on, all of the Arab nations gathered together to push Israel into the sea. In other words, they told the people, the Arab people that were living in so-called Palestine, Israel, they told them to get out and they'd be taken care of because we're going to take over all the land of Palestine that the UN has just given to Israel for its land. And we're going to take it back and we'll give it all to you. So an awful lot of people, about 700,000 of them left. And they were corralled into fenced areas, and they were called refugees. Well, guess what? Those Arab nations lost the war, as they have lost every war. But they didn't do anything with those poor so-called Palestinian refugees that they had seduced out of the area. And so forevermore, they've used them as a political wedge and hammer against the nations, against Israel. And we pick it up from there. Stay tuned. This is Viewpoint.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, "I'll build my church." Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, "Behold how they love one another." Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
What you may not know is that the Bible in the book of Numbers tells us how the tribes of Reuben and Gad, the tribes of Israel, came to Moses to ask if they could settle in the Transjordan area. It wasn't called Transjordan, but in that area on the other side of Jordan. In other words, the east side of the Jordan River, before the children, the rest of the children of Israel and their tribes came across the Jordan River to settle in Canaan or the Promised Land. And indeed, that's exactly what happened. Joshua affirmed in Joshua 1, Joshua affirmed Moses' decision and urged the men of the 2.5 tribes to help in the conquest of the Promised Land, and they were willing to do that until Canaan had been taken over by Joshua and the other tribes. They went back to the eastern side of Jordan, which is now called Transjordan, and there they settled. In other words, they, as part of the Jewish people, as part of the Israelites, they were already settled in what is now called Jordan or Transjordan. And God approved of that settlement. Therefore, in reality, from a biblical perspective, it was their land. The Ammonites and the Moabites that later had occupied much of that land were thorns in the flesh of Israel. And because they did not cooperate with Israel as their relatives and yet attacked Israel, God said, you're out of here. In other words, you're not going to get my favor. All that land is going to go to Israel now. All of it. Now, I'm trying to make this as simple as possible to understand without getting into the weeds of all kinds of deals and so on that the nations later made. To some extent, those aren't even relevant because God had already spoken. If we understand what God had already done, then perhaps we can understand what's happening now. In 1921, Winston Churchill severed Transjordan from Palestine to separate it from the so-called British Mandate for Palestine and the area intended for a Jewish national home. So for the next 25 years, Britain dominated the nation's affairs and created, trained, and led one of the region's most effective armies called the Arab Legion. But then in 1948, much of what the United Nations partitioned to be the Arab state became a real problem. It forced the capture of the eastern half of Jerusalem. So, Jordan claimed dominion over the Temple Mount. Jordan claimed dominion over half of Jerusalem. Jordan claimed dominion over what is now called the West Bank. In other words, on the Mediterranean side of the Jordan River, commonly referred to as the West Bank. But that's not what the Bible refers to it as. The Bible refers to it as Judea and Samaria, which was the heart of biblical Israel. Now, in general terms, the current king, Abdullah of Jordan, is a pretty nice guy. He's not as mean-spirited as many of the other Arab prime ministers and kings and so on. He gets along with the West pretty much. He doesn't usually get involved with the attacks of the Arabs against Israel. But ultimately, he's no friend of Israel either. He's trying to hold on to that region known as Transjordan, the eastern side of the Jordan River, which is by far the largest area of the so-called Palestinian Mandate that was entered into in the early 1900s. Now, let's take a look at where Jordan goes to. Jordan, a small part of Jordan, extends into the Euphrates River drainage basin, which is the longest river in Western Asia and flows through Iraq, Syria, and Turkey. According to the Bible, the land that God promised to Abraham extended from the Nile River in the south to the Euphrates River in the northeast, and the land included the eastern side of the Jordan River, Syria, and Lebanon. Well, guess what? If that's the land that God deeded as an eternal leasehold to Abraham, and then to Isaac, and then to Jacob, do you think that God has changed his mind? Do you think that God has withheld or withdrawn that commitment to the physical descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? If he did, he wouldn't be God, would he? He would break his word. He said, I am God, I don't lie. Not like you do. So, that brings us to this conundrum that Donald Trump has spoken into. He says, look, the best solution may well be no two-state solution, because there's no way to bring peace between the Gazans, whether you want to call them Palestinians or whatever you want to call them, it doesn't matter. The Gazans, those that inhabit Gaza, the Gaza Strip, which is, from God's perspective, part of the very land God deeded to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the children of Israel, not to the children of Ishmael. So whether or not Donald Trump realizes it, he says, maybe this is the best solution. Let's remove those people, those 2 million or so people, into other countries. Well, what countries? Well, that really brings up a bit of history again, and a new way of looking at what already happened, why it happened, and what's happened since. Well, Jordan, Transjordan, the whole eastern area from the Jordan River on is the land where they should have been. The problem with that is that most of that land was already deeded to Israel by God. So let's suppose that the people, the Gazans, get transported over there to Transjordan under King Abdullah, and he's not willing to take them. He doesn't much like them. No Arab nation likes them or wants them, besides which they want to continue to use them as a wedge to hammer Israel in the face of the rest of the nations, including the UN. They'll lose that. So they're against that idea. But it's the natural place for them to go, and that land area is so vast that there's plenty of land for them. Then also you have Egypt to the south. Why not have some of those folk go into Egypt? They're also Arabs. Egypt has been one of the leaders in attacking Israel over and over again. We now have a peace agreement entered into with Anwar Sadat and Yitzhak Rabin, but both of those leaders lost their lives because they did that. Wasn't exactly favorable to a lot of Arab folk. But they still entered into a peace agreement with Egypt. But there still isn't all that much, shall we say, affinity. Yet they're the natural place where the Gazans, who are Arab descendants of the same folk that inhabit Transjordan and in some respects Egypt. So Donald Trump says, look, that's where they should go. So both he and our new Secretary of State have talked to Mr. El-Sisi there in Egypt, and he says, no way, no how. We're not going to do that. The King of Jordan says, no way, no how. We're not going to do that. Well, that's kind of what Venezuelan's head said. No way, no how. That's kind of what the Panama Canal folk have said. That's kind of what Mexico has said. That's kind of what all these various groups have said when Donald Trump entered into the scene. And all of a sudden, they're changing their tune. The no way, no how becomes, well, let's talk. And the let's talk becomes, okay, how can we make this happen? In other words, the world is being shaken up. The Middle East is being shaken up. Something is happening here that is setting the stage for Israel ultimately to occupy what is known as Transjordan and the Gaza Strip, all of which God deeded as an eternal leasehold to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Does that make sense? Never say never, friends. When God has spoken, we don't know exactly how all of this is going to take place. All we know is that somehow it is going to take place. People wonder, where are all these Jewish people that are going to be fleeing the rest of the world going to go? About half of the Jews in the UK are planning on leaving. I have the article right here in front of me. They want to get out of the UK because of anti-Semitism. Where are they going to go? Well, the land. The land that God deeded is still there. Isn't it? Thanks for joining us here on Viewpoint today. Trust in the Lord, my friend, with all your heart. Don't lean to your own understanding. In all your ways, whatever they might be, acknowledge him, and he'll direct your path. He's God. You can trust him. He keeps his word, even though we don't. When we don't, we reap the consequences, the negative consequences. When we do, we're blessed. When Israel followed God's ways, they were blessed. When they didn't, they weren't. It's as simple as that. Get a copy of the book, King of the Mountain, because it'll open your eyes to help you to see the bigger picture. King of the Mountain, the eternal epic and end time battle. $15 will put that $20 book in your hands. It's on our website, saveus.org. Give us a call, 1-800-SAVE-USA. That's 1-800-SAVE-USA, or write to us at Save America Ministries. P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check at $6 for postage and handling. Pray for Israel. Pray for Benjamin Netanyahu, who is spending several days here in America. And some of these things have got to be straightened out. We don't know exactly how it's all going to happen, but it is going to happen. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. And become a partner with us, friends. We can't just do this by ourselves. We depend 100% on God, and he depends on you to help keep this ministry going. Go to the website. Make your generous gift that way. Write to us. Become a general partner every month. We sure appreciate those of you who have been so faithful. God bless and be a blessing.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.